At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Real quick, before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
Pinfinity Augmented Reality Enhanced Pins take traditional pin collecting to a whole new level.
Pinfinity has their own app that makes these pins come to life with their unique AR features that are super easy to use. The AR features include animations, sounds, and you can even pull up the card itself like this force indication.
Plus, they're durable too, which is nice because I like to put my pins on the outside of my backpack where they're exposed to the elements all the time.
And Pinfinity really values the community and encourages fans to share their experiences and suggest new designs too.
So use our affiliate link in the description below and code PTW to get a whopping 20% off of your orders there.
Now let's get into the podcast. This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code play to win 5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are blind ranking the top 10 decks in CEDH, or we're going to do our best shot. We don't know what's coming next. Cameron's going to randomly kind of pick one. We're going to say where we think it goes. This is based off of a few weeks of information post-ban. We're mid-November 2024 right now. Not a ton of info, but we have had a few tournaments, so we have that information in our brain, and we're going to see if we can get close to what are the actual best decks in CEDH right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, with the limited info that we have, we can still at least make like some sort of decision based on where we're going to put all 10 decks that we're going to talk about today. So we broke out the whiteboards. We haven't these out in a long time.
Still, I think we're going to have the same problem. It's going to be hard to see on screen, but
that's why I'm going to keep track of them. We actually got a new podcast format for this where you can see it. We're in the middle of the screen this time. I got the card image on the normal side, but it's a little smaller. And I also have our list that you'll be able to see as it continues to update. You'll see Cam's list for a couple seconds, then we'll transition to Dylan's list for a couple seconds.
I hope you actually do that, and then this part makes sense.
This is forcing me to do this.
Okay, yes. Yeah, you have to do this way now. So what are we, who's the first one? What's the first commander that we're talking about today? How are you picking these, by the way?
So I have a couple different websites that are coming up, and because I also need to keep a randomness aspect to it, yeah. I'm also not allowed to know what comes next. So
okay. There's
no predetermined list, but I'm just going to go off of feeling and also kind of one of the first commanders that I see as I pull up these websites.
I have a feeling that your list is going to be more accurate than mine either way, but we're gonna go into it.
Well, we're gonna find out. I think our lists are going to be both correct.
To be honest, I have a rough list already of where I stack everything and the decks that I'm most afraid of right now, so I'll probably just kind of stick to that as we go.
Yeah, and I'm not going to throw a ton of humongous curveballs. You're not going to get Anya Falcon Wrath today or anything like that.
Number one.
Yeah. Number one, yeah. All right, so I think let's just start off with Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy, because I think this is a deck that we all here know very well on the channel, and this is a deck that's incredibly popular. Got a lot of talk leading up to the meta after the recent bans. So that's kind of where we're at with Kinnan.
Kinnan feels great to me right now. It seems like the meta is going in a couple of directions. There's the direction where there is a turbo deck at the table. We talk about Rock'sai a lot. There's other ones too, like Kurik, etc. If there's a turbo deck that can win on turn one or turn two, everyone's got a mulligan to make sure they don't die on turn one or turn two and then survive after that. So that's one version of the meta. If there's no turbo deck at the table, that means everyone is grinding Rhystic Studies, basically. That's the only other option. That's the best option, is to grind. And I think really that's like the de facto thing to do. And then in my opinion, the best way to beat that grinding is to win on turn one or turn two, so everyone has to mulligan, or win with something that is very difficult to interact with in the late game, Hullbreaker Horror, something like that. Kinnan does very good at winning in a late game in a very difficult to interact with way,
while also being able to leverage Rhystic Studies and Mystic Remoras and all kinds of busted card advantage engines that most other decks really don't get the ability to take advantage of.
The issue that I have felt Kinnan has is it seems like it struggles against a ton of turbo decks. If there's a bunch of turbo decks at the table, Kinnan's going to have a hard time because there's no card advantage in the command zone. So if you have to mulligan low to stop one player from winning the game, you have a hard time getting back out of that, and it's a little bit slower, so Kinnan has a little bit of a hard time with that.
I also don't feel like, and this is going to come from someone who has never played a game of Kinnan,
yeah,
but I also don't feel like the deck mulligans very well. Like, it mulligans well in the sense that, like, you're looking for a turn one Kinnan, but I also want, like, as much mana as I can get. If I'm down two cards than normal in a game because I'm also trying to make sure one of the cards is like a fierce guardianship to make sure that I'm safe going into the game, like that puts me way more behind than like most other decks at the table.
I'm much more comfortable mulliganing low if I know my commander has card advantage or is insanely explosive. And Kinnan is neither of those things. Kinnan's not insanely explosive. Sometimes there's the, you know, you can, but
like you just need Basalt Monolith technically, but like you also need Mirage Mirror or like that artifact, or something else. Treasure Vault land.
It is a lot to say. I'm going to put Kinnan at three. It might be two, but I'm going to put it at three right now. I think Kinnan's a solid three. I think it's in a really great spot, but it's not what I want to do right now.
No, it's not what I want to do right now, but I think three is really where it does go because there was that one time last year that Kinnan was the best thing to do in the format, but I think it's really hard for Kinnan to get to that point where it is the strongest deck because it's so cheap, which also gives players the maximum opportunities to deal with it, to Deadly Rollick it, to Orcish Bowmaster your board. So I feel like there's a lot of...
Orcish Bowmaster, that's a big one, and probably the main reason why it's a number three.
Yeah, so I feel like because of all of the ways that there are to exploit it, it's not going to be the top deck, but considering that it didn't really lose as much as a lot of other decks from the bannings, I think that three is really good. And also, we can't ignore that there's been some recent tournament results that have shown that Kinnan has been really good.
We could talk about Kinnan for hours. Tyler's, we have talked about Kinnan for hours. We can move on. It's already been 6 minutes of Kinnan. Number three.
That's way too much of
Kinnan.
Way too much of Kinnan. Okay. So we're going to move on to Nigeela, the Blade Blossom.
Yeah. I feel Nigeela is similar to Kinnan in that you have a combo piece in the command zone, you have a board state kind of in the command zone, but Kinnan gives you the mana where Nigeela doesn't.
Kinnan gives you the board state.
Yeah, easier at development of the board state. Nigeela has a board state all on her own, but it's just 1/1s. Kinnan lets you develop a true board state of actual cards that are not 1/1s.
Yeah, he kind of does both.
It's so funny. 5 years ago, I would have said Nigeela is like the best deck in the format, and obviously 5 years is a long time. It's just a five color good stuff. It does everything super well. One card combos. To me, it's under Kinnan.
I think it's under Kinnan too. I'm actually going to put her like towards the bottom of the list today.
Really?
I think there's a lot of decks that I'm a little bit higher on that I feel like I'd rather be on right now. And like she's always going to be good, but I feel like she's kind of old news now. Like everyone knows that she's fine. And she's gone back to the days of you can't really turn one Nigeela. You're kind of going turn one Mana Dork into turn two Nigeela and attacking with her on turn three, which means that the whole Nigeela plan already is not really that good anymore. Like what's making her good is ad nauseum into Underworld Breach lines.
I think the best spot to be right now is to be deploying card advantage on turn two so that turn three you are untapped with card advantage in play. But Nigeela's game plan, normally, I could be wrong, maybe you wait until Nigeela to be very late, but when I see Nigeela players, normally they're playing Nigeela on turn two, so everyone else has their card advantage before you. So that's not really what I want to be doing. I want my card advantage before everyone else. And Nigeela has the ability to get out early Rhystic Studies and Mystic Remorse and do that instead. But when your main game plan is the Nigeela thing, that's just a lesser good game plan to me. So for me, six. I'll say six.
You're going to put her at six?
I'm going to put her at six.
Yeah, I think everything that you said is right because it also like kind of convinces you to keep hands that will let you get Nigeela out and then like kind of do nothing else
and
while the
what?
Rest of the board is just like snowballing way ahead of you.
Right, yeah.
I put her at seven.
Seven, okay.
I put her at
we're pretty close far.
We're pretty close there, yeah. Let's talk about another five color deck. Asika, God of the World Tree.
This one just won some tournament or got some place high in tournament,
I guess,
right?
I told you I wasn't going to throw you some curveballs, but I guess this one I'll technically call this one a curveball. So Asika actually got two top 16 places in the Boil.
Yeah, the Boil 2.
The Boil 2.
Yeah.
Which the sequels are always worse than the original.
I think I'm missing something with this Asika deck.
I looked
through the list. Can you look at the list like one more time?
Because I'm going to look at the 10th place list, which is the highest placing list that it got here.
From what I see, it's just a five color good stuff deck. Nothing wrong with that. But why not play Nigeela? And maybe the reason is you want literal no dead cards. Derevi, maybe without your commander, Derevi's bad. You're going to see Dranith Magistrates. You don't want to risk a one card combo. I'm trying to wrap my brain around it. I'm sure there's a reason.
See, I don't like that reason because your commander's a dead card. I feel like you're still hindering yourself
way. And then maybe just like a three mana dork is good enough that turns your Lotho into a mana dork. Is there anything else that seems out of the ordinary, or is it just all five? It's all good stuff. Like, if you're going to play my gut would be to play a cheaper commander, a two-mana one.
Like Ezio or Jensen Karthalion.
Because
like,
then at least those turn on your Fierce Guardianships quicker.
And you don't even need to play Lurrus. Like, right. People play those because they play Lurrus, but you don't need to do that.
These players are topping tournaments, and we are not. There's maybe something we're missing, but from where my brain is right now, I got to give this one a 9.
This is where I'm at with this. You're playing Asika because you're trying to make yourself not be the threat, but you're actually just playing Najeela without Derevi, and you're relying heavily on like a really fast game plan.
Maybe it is that, like, I'm not the threat, I'm playing Asika.
Yeah, my commander doesn't really do anything. I don't even think you ever cast your commander. You don't play Mox Amber. Do you even play Fierce Guardianship?
Maybe it's just distraction. Maybe it was just a meta call. Maybe two people were on a meta call.
You do play Fierce Guardianship.
We don't know about. Oh, you do play them.
Yeah, you do play them. So I guess there are scenarios where you are trying to get them out, but I don't know. To me, that's what I think you're doing, is you're trying to play a mind game with the... So this only worked for this tournament. You're trying to play a mind game with the table and then doing what's actually really good against the Heuristic Study meta, which is trying to win as quickly as possible with ad nauseum.
Yeah. Those things are all true. It's still a five-color good stuff deck. It's still five-color good stuff with no commander is going to win a decent chunk of games, I think. I gave it a 9. It's the only reason I didn't give it a 10.
I see. I gave her a 10 because I'm going to deploy the, well, why don't you just play another better commander logic? Probably throughout the whole video as I compare her to Najeela.
I don't know if you're going to pick something way out of left field. Like you said, you weren't going to go too crazy, but I want to give a little bit of room just in case.
No, I think that's fair. Maybe I'll end up, you know, fucking myself over by doing this. So we'll see. Let's talk about Magda next, because Magda is a lot of fun and one of my loves.
Yeah, you just personally put Magda back together.
I did. Actually, I had there was a patron, Reactive, had requested that we play her on the channel post-ban now, and I put it together and got a couple of practice games in already, and she still feels so good. I haven't really played her since Orcish Bowmaster has been around, since Roaming Throne has been around. I haven't been able to do anything with Roaming Throne yet, but like Orcish Bowmaster has really not been a problem. Portal to Phyrexia is still great. I was able to get Portal to Phyrexia out, have someone sacrifice their Phantasmal Image so that I could get Phantasmal Image back and make a copy of Bowmaster, meaning that Bowmaster is no longer a problem, and Portal to Phyrexia can get Magda back too.
That's pretty good.
I don't even have to cast Magda again. So there's just still so much utility in Magda, and she's gotten a lot of new tools. There's a new 6-mana artifact from the Big Score bonus sheet from Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
What does it do?
It's called Nexus of Beginning or something like that. It's a Nexus of something, and at the beginning of combat on your turn, you draw a card, and then you can exile an artifact or a creature from your hand and make a 3/3 golem artifact creature copy of it. So it's funny because...
It's a copy of it, right? So next turn, you draw two cards.
Every turn that I'm drawing two cards, right?
And if you make another copy of it, the next one you draw...
No, you make a copy of the card that you exile from your hand.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was the One Ring, or like it's like
stacks
like that.
Well, if you exile the One Ring, you make a 3/3 indestructible One Ring, which pretty good. If you exile God Pharaoh Statue for free, you got a 3/3 God Pharaoh Statue.
I understand.
If you exile a 1-mana dwarf from your hand, you get a 3/3 artifact dwarf, right?
How much mana is this card?
It's a 6-mana card, but Magda...
But you can search it for Magda.
Exactly,
all you need is basically that one search, and then you can find the artifact?
I can get it at instant speed, right? Yeah. It's great if like I can hold up a Magda activation and not have to use it on interaction to like find a Torpor Orb to stop someone's Thoracle or something like that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to rate Magda way higher than I should. Honestly, I really do think Magda is one of the best decks in the format. I'm going to put it at number 2 and maybe regret, but Magda's ability to win in such a difficult to interact with way allows you to kind of sidestep the Heuristic Study stuff.
It's really
nice.
You
have 100 cards in your hand. I'm just going to search my library. You can't counterspell me searching my library. Yes, you might have Opposition Agent, but like the deck is full of removal spells and planning on ways to get rid of the Opposition Agent, I think. So for me, I'm giving it a 2. I think it's at a really good spot in the metagame right now.
Nice. I'm really excited about that. I'm giving her a 4, but I think that I'm really excited by your ranking of Magda.
I think it's such a difficult deck to interact with and a difficult deck for other players to understand. You also have to rely on all of your opponents knowing how Magda works, which is like a big deal.
Oh,
that's why Taim is also really good.
That's part of the reason why I don't want to put her up at 2, because I don't want to be targeted all the time.
Yeah. You gotta downplay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Magda's really great right now. It's one of the decks that I'm most afraid of. So for me, Magda's number 2.
Yeah, great. All right, that sounds good to me. The next deck we're going to talk about is Rograkh Silas, which is a deck we've talked about in spades on the channel recently. So I don't think we have to talk about a ton, but I do want to ask you, you've made a couple of changes to your Rograkh Silas recently, right? You made a couple of swaps?
I did. I took out Orcish Bowmaster, which is so funny.
I love this change so much.
I think Orcish Bowmaster is a really good card right now, but in specifically what I'm trying to do, it doesn't help me win on turn one or turn two, which is like the main goal. The main thing that Orcish Bowmaster has done for me is get rid of other Orcish Bowmasters, which can be good, but I just replaced it back with Snap. I had taken Snap out because no Dockside, but just being able to basically have like free interaction, whereas like you at least get the mana back, is so huge in a deck like Rog'Sai. Being able to be sort of a ritual makes Snap like a way to advance your game plan, even if you don't have a removal spell to hit. So I like that a lot. I also put in an Offer You Can't Refuse, took out Force of Negation. I kind of went back to the line of like, well, at least it could maybe like counter a Chromox that I have no other spell to cast and make two treasures right now. Making double blue has been a little bit tricky sometimes, so I wanted access to that.
Not only that, I feel like it's way more important that you can counter things on your turn when you're trying to win than stopping someone else in Rog'Sai specifically.
Yeah, one mana is still more than three mana, even though it can be for free. More often than not, I want my counter spells to protect what I'm doing on my turn, it feels like.
For ad nauseum purposes, too. Yeah. Like, that also kind of helps you a little bit more.
And then there was one more card that I swapped it with, recently. Fellwar Stone. Yes, Fellwar Stone. I just wanted another way to make mana, another way to turn Jessica's Will mana into mana that I need, another way to make blue mana. That's been my kind of point, is like I can do everything I want, but like I'm struggling to make that last double blue, which is oftentimes fine. You can just win with Breach, but there are some times where like this would just be much easier if I could just win with blue right now. I have it. It's as protected as it can be. It would just be seven less steps if I could just have double blue right now, but it's not. Where I'm going to put this deck, this is my opinion, right? This is
for my opinion,
Rog'Sai is number one. I know a lot of people are not going to agree with that, but it's the reason why it's my main deck right now, is I truly do think it's the best deck. So for me, I'm putting at number one. I know this already very obviously I am missing probably one of the best decks in the format, and it's not in my first three, but these are the decks that I think are most powerful and I'm most afraid of. So I put Rog'Sai as number one.
And yeah, exactly. You don't know what's coming next, so that's why we're rating them this way. I put Rog'Sai as my number two.
That probably makes more sense. Yeah, your list makes more sense.
It is this thing that I am the most scared of during the first three turns of the game, and then if we get past that point until Rog'Sai gets down another card advantage engine, I'm not as scared of Rog'Sai.
In Rog'Sai, more than any other deck, the Rhystic Studies and the Mystical Moors are win conditions. As the opposing player, this is such bad advice coming from the Rog'Sai player, but I don't even think you should consider them as advantage. You should consider them as win conditions, because Rog'Sai, it's all tutors and rituals. That's the whole deck, is tutors, rituals, and counterspells. So like every card that I draw is so live. There's so few lands. Each individual card, I think, has more of an impact in Rog'Sai. There are maybe some decks where you don't Red Blast the Mystical Moor or the Rhystic Study. Probably wrong in almost all decks, but in Rog'Sai, it's certainly wrong. You must get rid of it as quickly as possible.
Definitely. I definitely agree. I think my favorite one out of all these is taking out Bowmaster, though.
Yeah.
Because that card, I feel like, is just a bit of a trap in this deck. You're never taking out the table with multiple Wheel of Fortunes.
It's looked at as like an alternate win con, kind of, but it never actually plays that role, and it just was used against me too much. It was too often somebody else Phantasmal Images pings it off, and then my Rog'Sai is threatened, and now I can't really add Nauseam or my Rhystic Study. The ping's good on my face, and I need to use my life as a resource, so it was just doing more harm than good.
I feel like, Bowmaster is great at wiping your opponent's boards real quick, but the second that they find a clone, like, it totally goes against you, and then, like, the second person with the Bowmaster is always, like, the player that has the Bowmaster that sticks or something. Yeah,
and I don't care about your board. I don't care about killing your Birds of Paradise. I don't want to do that. Like, in Rog'Sai specifically. In other decks, killing mana is really good. In Rog'Sai, I don't care about killing your Birds of Paradise, because ideally, you're not going to untap with it. I want something that's going to make sure that you don't even untap with your Birds of Paradise. That's by using the Snap to bounce something else. Mnemonic Betrayal also is a big one. Everyone plays Mnemonic Betrayal. I think that's just a personal issue for me. I've played over 50 games with Rog'Sai now, and I've never once resolved Mnemonic Betrayal. I don't think. Like, it just has never come up. It's never been good. It's never been relevant.
Yeah.
Other people have different experiences than me. After so many games of never seeing it, I'm like, why? I can play something else. Like, I'm either not playing this card correctly or something's going on, but I'm not seeing it.
I feel like it's used as like your late game win condition after your Praetor's Grasp.
Yeah.
Like, that's your plan C, is Praetor's Grasp. And I feel like after that's dealt with, then you go to Mnemonic Betrayal, because it's late in the game enough for it to be able to go off. But I feel like
I'm just going
to
lose those games.
I'm just going to say 90% of the time.
I'm going to say I'm going to lose that game and put in a card that helps me win more when when I want to win.
Yeah, and the Fail Warstone does that perfectly.
If I've gone past plan C, I just lose. I just lose after plan C. I only have three plans. I'm just going to be okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's talk about Sissei Weatherlight Captain, Dylan. This was one of your favorite decks
before the new bans happened.
Yeah. And it still did get into the top eight, actually, of the Boil 2.
I don't think the deck is dead. I think it loses some of its explosiveness. I think it was the best Dockside deck, and it was really able to capitalize on greedy players and winning off Dockside very quickly. Can't do that anymore, but it's still in the same ballpark of Magda and Hullbreaker Horror as being difficult to interact with, I think, since your win condition is just activations and creatures. And yes, they are Planeswalkers, but you're not casting the Planeswalkers. So I think because of that, I like it into Heuristic Study World a little bit more than I initially thought, but I still don't think it's great. And I think I still probably rate it under Najeela.
Honestly, I'm writing her name at the number eight spot.
Najeela. I'm going to lock in under Najeela. I think I would still at this point rather play Najeela because Najeela just plays less dead cards.
That's the thing. Yeah, Sissei still has a bunch of awkward cards that are even more clunky to play now. So I totally understand why I would want to go to Najeela before I would want to go back to Sissei right now. Especially because I feel like Najeela also lost a little bit less.
Yeah.
They're both like the perfect Jeweled Lotus commander. So like they both get, you know, real hit in the same explosive way there.
I still think Sissei is a top 10 deck. I think it belongs on this list. If you want to bring it to a tournament, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you could win. It's a great deck. Maybe 2 months ago, I would have put it at number three, and now it's number seven.
Or number eight, if you're me.
Or number eight.
I want to talk about my deck now.
Yes.
Rograkh Thrasios.
Give me your thoughts on this one first.
This deck also did get a top 16 appearance. What I've realized recently is that actually my deck looks a little bit different, quite a bit different than what a lot of like the Sam Black kind of list have been looking at.
What are your main differences?
They focus a lot more on Gaia's Cradle than I do, which makes them be a lot more turbo than what my deck is actually. Because what I had realized was when I had originally built my version of Rog Thras, I got like a little bit of inspiration from their list, but I don't think like I leaned into a lot of the Gaia's Cradle stuff as heavily as maybe I should have. And I was like thinking that Underworld Breach was going to come up a little bit more often, and that's how like the turbo aspect of the deck was going to feel a little bit more. And then I started to play the deck and I was like all the turbo based cards just felt so bad. And in a deck that was really only running like two creatures that I want in play outside of my commanders, like for a long period of time, I was finding that like Gaia's Cradle as a win condition really wasn't the most reliable thing. And I was also finding that not only was I a lot slower than I thought that I was going to be, but Underworld Breach was way more difficult to tutor than I thought.
The other decks that are playing Rograkh Thrasios right now in the tournaments, they are more Underworld Breach. What creatures do they have that you don't? More Mana Dorks?
Displacer Kitten's one. I ended up cutting Displacer Kitten because my commanders don't do anything with Displacer Kitten. So it doesn't feel like it really does much except for add a little bit of mana that is not really getting me too far. I am still on the fence with Valley Floodcaller, again, because I don't really have a lot of permanents that I want to put into play. I have a lot of creature-based combos that want a creature in play. So Valley Floodcaller is not helping me win at instant speed as often as Born Upon the Wind and the Emergence Zone crop rotation stuff is.
Are you going to play the new fairy, the 4-mana one?
I'm still debating on that, too. That will help with my Gaia's Cradle stuff a little bit more, but 4 mana is also a lot.
So much.
I'm not playing any clones. They are on Phyrexian Metamorph here. I'm not playing Sowing Mycospawn, which is a way that people say allows you to get Gaia's Cradle into play for free.
Oh.
I've never had enough creatures in play that would be for free.
4 mana.
It's a 4 mana 3/3, yeah.
4 mana, that's so much.
That's so much. So I need...
And just play Sylvan Tutor.
That's Sylvan Scrying. Sylvan Scrying. Which they're on too, and I was much rather be on Sylvan Scrying. Like Sylvan Scrying is much more appealing to me.
What about that that 4 mana sorcery that I play in casual that's like friend or foe? For each friend, that player searches for a land. For each foe, destroy an artifact or enchantment they control.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
For 4 mana to get a Gaia's Cradle in play, you can also destroy 3 artifacts
and
enchantments.
Does that one make them enter tapped, though?
Oh, maybe.
Like, what's cool about the Sowing Mycospawn is
that... I don't even know the name of it. Never mind.
Neither do I. Yeah, what's cool about the Sowing Mycospawn is that it lets Gaia's Cradle enter the battlefield
untapped. Okay. What do you rate this deck right now in the metagame?
So, in the metagame, I'm a little bit biased, but I think I'm going to give it a 6 to try to... hedge against my biases.
Number five for me. Rockthrass is number five. It's a scary deck. I think it's strong.
That's where I wanted to put Rockthrass, but I already locked it in.
I think just Rograk period, powerful. Anything that you pair with that is going to be good, and Rockthrass having the outlet in the command zone is really good for me. This is also a Hullbreaker horror deck. I think so far, all of the decks, Rockside goes very fast. Magda's difficult to interact with. Kinnan's difficult to interact with. Rockthrass is difficult to interact with. And then everything after that, Najeela, I guess Sissei is difficult to interact with, but Najeela is not. So that is kind of confusing that I swatched those.
You know what,
those
I would
two.
Say Asika is also not, too.
Asika is not difficult to interact with.
The other thing I want to say about Rockthrass being difficult to interact with is Shifting Woodlands in particular. Like, so that
good.
Card in particular.
If you're going to play green, that's the card I would want to play
not
right now.
Only do you get stopped, but then you are able to uncounterably then not get stopped like immediately after. The card is incredibly powerful. So I think you're probably more correct with putting Rockthrass at five. The fast versions that play like Earthcraft and a lot of other cool cards, I think those decks are very cool, very powerful. I kind of like my slower version of the deck a little bit more that can still be a little bit more controlling and play a little bit more into the long game too. I don't know. I think whatever direction you go with this commander combination is going to be good because Thrasios is way better right now because of new cards like Shifting Woodlands, and Rograk is just like the best commander in the format right now.
Yeah, I think so too.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Speaking of Thrasios, we should just get Thrasios Kinna out of the way with.
Yeah. Realistically, I'm putting it at number four. There's a real good argument that Thrasios Kinna is one of, if not the best decks in the format right now. And realistically, for me, Magda and Thrasios Kinna should probably be switched. Here's my reasoning that they're not switched. One, I think Magda is more difficult to interact with, even though the new Devoted Druid combos that Thrasios Kinna is doing are trickier to interact with in some ways. They're creatures and, you know, yada yada. But I think more people don't understand Magda that don't understand Timna Thrasios. That was a difficult way of saying that less people will be misplaying against Timna Thrasios than will be misplaying against Magda. Does that make sense?
That does. And including me. Yeah, which is interesting to say because, Thrasios Timna is just kind of like a good stuff deck.
But it's
like,
been good for 5 years. Right? Everyone knows what to do.
It's so infamous and notorious that everyone knows that, like, you have to watch out for the Timna Thrasios player and that they're always going to be one of the biggest threats at the table no matter what. So it's always going to have that leering eye of Sauron completely hitting it at all times.
Yeah, whereas Magda, it doesn't matter how good Magda gets, Magda's mono red. There's going to be a moment in your head where you justify they're playing dwarfs. Like, this player's going to untap and play Thoracle. I'm going to have to respect that. You know what I mean? Like, those things are going to come up. Thrasios is going to reveal a Thoracle, and you're like, well, I don't want to do anything against Magda because I have to stop the Thoracle player. And then Thoracle player goes for the win, and Magda says, I'll win on top after everyone tries to stop them.
Yeah, that's funny. The information that you do get from Thrasios activations really does hurt you, especially as like a control player then too, because it makes everyone else force you to interact so that you don't have interaction for someone else later.
It's undoubtedly strong and much stronger now than it has been in a long time. I think the losing of Dockside means that the comparable mid-range shell of Blue Farm is a lot less powerful now, and you yourself don't have to worry about feeding Docksides, which this deck doesn't abuse a ton, but it is playing a couple. I don't know. I give it a four.
I'm a sheep. I put it at number one. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not number nine, and I definitely don't think it's number five. It won the Boil 2 and got like a couple other top 16
yours makes sense.
Things.
Yeah, yours so, like, makes more sense.
It's hard to not say it, but like, I also think that that's the case because like, people are just defaulting to it because they know that the color combination's good.
Yeah.
However, I would like to say that I think that these Devoted Druid builds of Timna Thrasios are the real deal.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many different ways that you can combo with Devoted Druid now, and having Hazel's Brewmaster.
The squirrel. We never talked about the squirrel.
We didn't talk about the squirrel.
What set was this from? I missed this card completely.
This is a Bloomborough Commander card.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Can you read this card? Because this one is like a CDH staple in this deck, and we missed
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is Hazel's Brewmaster. This is 3 and a black for a 3/4 Squirrel Warlock with Menace. Whenever Hazel's Brewmaster enters or attacks, you exile up to one target card from a graveyard and create a food token. Foods you control have all activated abilities of all creatures exiled with Hazel's Brewmaster. So the way that this works is with Devoted Druid in your graveyard, you can exile it with Hazel's Brewmaster's Enter the Battlefield trigger, creating a food that has both the ability to tap for a green mana and the ability to put a -1/-1 counter to untap it. And obviously, you can't kill a food token with -1/-1 counters.
It's got no power and toughness.
So you just make infinite mana this way.
Right.
And it's a super easy thing to set up because your devoted druid is going to get killed when you inevitably try to put Swift Reconfiguration on it the first time. So this is like the perfect thing to have as like a fuck you moment for everyone else at the table.
And not only that, devoted druid can just put itself in the graveyard too. You can just put a couple -1/-1 counters on devoted druid
and just put it right
in the graveyard
itself.
Funny. You don't have to wait the removal, right? So like, I think this one's the real deal. It being two creatures that win the game, that's really good because everyone out of everyone's counter spells, most of them are negates. There's Force of Will, there's Pact of Negation, there's Mana Drain sometimes. What other counter spells hit creatures?
Delay. But Delay? Like, is anyone playing Delay anymore?
Not as many.
I guess the new Flare of Denial.
Flare of Denial. Okay. So that's five. Most decks play over 11 counter spells.
Did you say Trap?
I have Mind Break Trap too.
But even then, this is the first spell that you're casting if the other thing's in your graveyard.
I think that's super helpful. And the fact that, yes, you can Swift Reconfiguration, and then also, even if you don't kill the Devoted Druid, if they kill it, because they're going to want to, just have like a still another way to combo on top of that.
Yeah.
Plus the Machine God's Effigy.
Right.
Which
now
is
we
just
have
another clone.
We have like three actually good ways to combo with Devoted Druid now.
Yeah, which is very interesting. Yeah, I think that it does make the deck a formidable tier one deck in the format right now. I have it number four because it's boring. I know how to beat it.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely is boring.
Yeah.
But it gets the job done, which a lot of times that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The next deck that we're going to talk about.
Uh-oh. I only have 8 and 10 left.
I only have 5 and 9 left. This really has just been like a list of decks that I want to talk about so far and like what I think about
them. That's just what this podcast is. It's just stuff we want to talk about.
That really is. Do you have a deck that you want to talk about?
Glarb is the
Glarb
that I'm putting together.
Glarb is the next one that we're going to talk about.
Glarb's number 10. I'm glad I left. Open.
Open, man. Yeah, I'm putting at number 9, I guess. Yeah.
We had Nick Foles Goto 9 recommended me play a Glarb list recently. I like the deck a lot. I ended up swapping somewhere around 15 cards, 11 of ish were spells, and then a couple lands, I think. I think Glarb is really cool right now. It does a lot of fun stuff that doesn't actually say draw a card on it, so you don't have to worry about Bowmasters as much. I'm playing Doomsday and Bolas of Citadel because surveilling the top with Bolas of Citadel is really nice. I'm also playing Hermit Druid because there's a lot of overlap with the Doomsday lines and the Hermit Druid lines. Fate Stitcher works really well with your commander because you can surveil twice, so you can use your commander to crack the Doomsday pile, mill over a Fate Stitcher and a Dread Return, flashback the Fate Stitcher to untap your commander, mill again, mill over like a Narcomoeba and the Thassa's Oracle, and you can win that way. Hermit Druid also really works. That's the Doomsday pile, but Hermit Druid also works the same way, milling over the Narcomoeba and the Fate Stitcher, the Dread Return. This is the combos that I haven't seen play in 5 years because they're kind of easy to interact with and they're very all in. Is that very good? No, but I'm playing right now because I want to try out Hermit Druid with Born Upon the Wind. I want to Born Upon the Wind, flash in Hermit Druid in your end step, and then untap and Hermit Druid right away. Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested in the deck a lot, but the real reason that I'm playing it is because the same reason I think Asika deck players are playing it is that I'm playing fucking Glarb. I'm not, like, don't look at me. I'm not the threat. I'm playing
yeah, right?
Glarb. Realistically, I think Thrasios Timna does the same thing better. It just grinds in Salt Deck colors, but you also have access to Ranger Captain, Grand Abolisher, which are very, very powerful, especially right now.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's really the other good way to be uninteractable in the Rissic Study world. Like, if you are the grind them out with Rissic Study deck, you still need to be able to try to finish the game.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that was the issue. We played a game at Locals recently where it was a 3-hour game that there was a Derevi player, and the Derevi player was just able to, after we all drew 1,000 cards, Derevi can just scoot into play off of an activation. And what I didn't really realize about Derevi is that Derevi doesn't leave the command zone when you put that activation on the stack.
Oh, yeah, because it's just an activation.
Yeah, it's just an activation. So if someone responds, you can say, I will put Derevi into battlefield again. Now, this is an obvious thing for people who played against, but I haven't played against Derevi in a CDH setting in fucking 5 years. So the One Ring has really breathed a lot of new life into that deck. Uninteractable. I don't know where I'm going with that, but Glarb is number 10.
Do you know where I'm going with that?
What?
Derevi's the next deck that we're going to talk about.
I guess 8 feels a little bit better for me then because...
Oh, I fucked up. Derevi's at 5.
5 for you.
Ah, fuck.
Yeah, Derevi was pretty interesting. I like Derevi with the bunny. What's the bunny?
Preston. So the way this works is when you activate your
Derevi
with infinite mana and it he comes into play, Preston, because you didn't cast Derevi, makes a copy of Derevi, which gives you 2 untap triggers, which will let you like untap your Faberow Elder
so
you can make infinite mana that way with Preston, which is super cool. And then with like the One Ring, that can eventually be one of the things that you pivot to untapping that.
Yeah, One Ring, the Fairy Mastermind, stuff like that.
Yeah, Fairy Mastermind works too because you just keep activating its ability to draw the table.
Do you remember what you did wrong against the Derevi?
Yeah, so I had a interactive bounce spell. I had a Cyclonic Rift, and I think I should have used it against Preston at some point instead of trying to like use it against literally anything
else. I think
else.
You tried to bounce the Fabor Elder.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, and, I wanted to stop like the ability for him to produce so much mana.
I thought I remember at the time it didn't. He could have responded to the bounce spell either way, but yeah, the card is good in Derevi. I think the only issue is it's a 4-mana spell and then 4-mana an act Derevi. You have to have a lot of mana. So if you don't have the Fabor Elder or the Bloom Tendra thing going on, that can be a little bit tricky. But if you can slow the game down and get your mana developed, I actually think Derevi is in a great spot right now.
I think so too. Yeah, definitely the best that it's ever been, even since like the stacks Derevi decks. I feel like Derevi still feels like way better right now.
The One Ring just made it so insane. You're like the best One Ring deck ever. Just leaning on that is powerful, and then also having access to like interesting combo lines that people don't quite understand and are difficult to interact with, I think it's a good spot.
Yeah, I forget that like multiple creatures attacking with Derevi out. Yeah, like that's multiple untapped. It's not just like a bonus untap.
Right.
Turn.
Untapping the One Ring draws one card and two more cards, so that's three, and then three more cards, so that's six. So then all of a sudden, like you can, and then the next turn, it's like it can snowball very quickly.
It really can. Yeah. It seems pretty resilient too. So it shouldn't be at number five for me, but it is.
You know what deck we didn't talk about today?
What deck?
Timnacrom.
Timnacrom. We didn't talk about Timnacrom at all. Well, we just didn't have room for Timnacrom.
Honorable mention. Timnacrom.
Timnacrom's an honorable mention. I mean, if we're
still
being
fine.
Honest, like
still
the
good.
Deck's still fine, but it also didn't do as well at the Boil 2 as I expected it to do.
I kind of view Timnacrom as like, if you want to grind the mid-range, I think Timna Thrasios does that better right now. If you want to go fast, I think Rog'Sai does that better right now. If you want to be difficult to interact with, I think Kinnan does that better right now. All it does is just generic shit well, and other decks all do that generic shit a little bit better.
Yeah, because it does grind, but it's not easy to like not be able to like be stopped, I guess.
With Dockside, same with Sisse, like you had the option to explode quickly, whereas now that option to explode quickly is kind of lessened, whereas like Thrasios Timna can explode quickly. That druid line can be really quick if you mulligan for it.
Because Machine God's Effigy doesn't need haste. Hazel's food token doesn't need haste. You can just go off if you're already set up for it.
I think just right now, Thrasios Timna is just looking a little bit better to me.
I think so too, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe in theory, Asika shouldn't be on this list.
Asika, Glarb, and Derevi should all not be on this. If we're going like straight power level, realistically, Timnacrom is probably, I think, just right under Sisse.
You somehow got the three bottom decks like perfect. Like my bottom decks like seem a little more messed up.
Well, are there any other decks we missed? I'm sure there are.
I tried not to like avoid decks. A couple others that I was thinking of bringing up were Grixis Pirates, just because that one's done pretty well. But it's also like, I don't know, not different enough for me to say, why aren't you just playing Rog'Sai? Like, I do think that creature-based combos are an awesome spot to be in right now, which is also part of the reason why I think the Devoted Druid lines are in such a good spot. But at the same time, like, I think if you're trying to win really quickly in Grixis Colors, like, lean into winning quickly in Grixis Colors. Don't slow yourself down and, like, weaken the strengths of your deck. Don't do that.
I think I agree with you there.
Yeah, so that's why I didn't want to talk about that, but I didn't really have, like, any other ones that I was, like, mad stoked to talk about, because it was this list. These are the 10.
Should we go from 10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
Let's go from 10 to 1. What do you have at number 10, Dylan?
For me, number 10 is Glarb, just because I'm playing it right now, and I think it's almost good enough to be CDH.
My number 10 is Asika, because you should put literally any other 5-color commander. What happened to Kenrith even? Like, that does
more. We didn't even talk about Kenrith at all. Yeah, my 9 is Asika for the same reason. Why aren't you playing another 5-color deck?
My 9 is Glarb, because I love that we're having fun with Doomsday, but also, I think you've been telling me a couple times that you know it's going to eventually turn into like Thrasios Timna, so
it's gonna turn Thrasios Timna. Part of me wants to keep one non-meta deck together, which is why I have Glarb, but part of me also knows that I like to win, so I'll probably play a deck that's better. Derevi is next for me because we recently lost to it, and I think interactable stuff is pretty good right now in CDH.
I have number 8 as Sisse, and I feel like that's pretty comparable to where you have Derevi, I guess. I do kind of feel like they're kind of at the same spot. The hard to interact with lines are there. One took a big hit from the bans, and the other one's in a better place because of the bans.
Yes.
So
that's
two differences there.
I have Sisse at number 7 for exactly kind of what you just said. Yeah, I got nothing else on that one.
Yeah, I got 7 at Najeela here too, just because I think she's underperformed in my eyes a little bit more now that she's slowed down quite a bit.
Bowmaster, you know, Bowmaster.
Yeah, that's another thing. Bowmaster's still really good.
Najeela's 6 for me.
Ooh, Rogthrass 6 for me.
This is okay. What a weird Rogthrass section. Is 5 for me.
Wow, that's so. All right, let's change it up. Derevi is 5 for me.
Okay, yeah. Now there's a different. Thrasios Timna for me. Realistically, Thrasios Timna is probably tied for Rog'Sai and Kinnan as the actual best decks in the format, but I'm more afraid of Magda.
I think that's fair. I have Magda at number 4 because I don't want everyone to be as afraid of Magda. Please don't hit Magda. Please don't hit Magda.
Hit Kinnan, my number 3. You should hit Kinnan instead.
Hit Kinnan, yeah. We put it on a playmat.
Yeah.
Gold Sabertooth wrote it on the playmat. Kill the Kinnan.
It says right on there.
Because it's the third best deck in CEDH right now.
Number 2 is Magda for me. Uninteractable at the highest level, I think.
It's so funny how, like, the decks, we are clearly putting our number 2 decks as, like, weirdly enough, the deck that we're scared of the most.
Yes.
Because I've lost to Rog'Sai a lot recently and have to mulligan heavily for it. You don't want to lose to Magda. Yeah, so that's funny.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Rog'Sai specifically should be more afraid of blue, but what I'm afraid of is I'm going to be at a table with 2 other blue decks, and those blue decks will stop me, and I can't do shit against Magda, and Magda wins after I try.
That's so funny.
That's
yeah.
the play pattern that I'm used to with Magda, and that's a play pattern. So that's how I see it. Even though the blue decks are the ones that stop me, Magda's the one that, like, rubs my face in the dirt after it wins,
the,
you know?
Magda won the game. Yeah,
it's
exactly. Magda's
That's
fault.
Who I'm mad at.
Wow. Talk about shooting the messenger.
Yeah.
All right. And then your number 1 deck.
Number 1's Rog'Sai. It's the deck that I'm playing right now. It's the reason I'm playing it because I think it's the best deck in the format. It's the fastest deck in the format, and it have protected wins. I love everything about it.
It's the best way to combat the format, too, I think.
And sometimes you get Force of Will quickly, and you're out of the game for 7 turns until you can inch back in, but that's okay.
That was going to happen to your Mystic Remora no matter what deck you're playing.
I've always been a turbo player in other formats. I want to play quickly, besides, you know, Jund guy when I was in the beginning, but ever since then, I want to play fast. I want to get the game over with so I can go to the bathroom, because I have to go to the bathroom, and then I want to come back for the next round. So, Rog'Sai for me.
Cool. And my number 1 is Timna Thrasios, just because of statistics, I guess, right now. It just seems really good.
Yeah, it just seems really good. The Devoted Druid stuff, I just think is really good right
in
now.
In the new best color combination. All right, quick sidebar. I'm starting to think that red is now the least good color in CEDH, and green is now swapping places.
I think they're a lot closer. That's for sure.
A little bit more.
I think they're a lot closer. I think Underworld Breach is insane. I think Underworld Breach is a complete power outlier that makes it very difficult to compare. Because if you take Underworld Breach out of the equation, I do think green is better now than red. Red was always held up by Dockside and Breach, but now it's just Breach.
I feel like Breach is also kind of like, I don't want to say hanging on by a thread, but if it's like the only thing that your deck is doing, or if it's like the only thing that your deck is doing in red, I think it makes it a lot harder to be in that color.
We have 1, Rogthrass is 2, Najeela is 3, Asika is 4. We have 4 decks that are playing Underworld Breach, and 2 more of them that are red that aren't playing it. So 4 out of 10 really isn't a ton.
Whereas 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 decks, 8 out of these decks are all in green. It's just Magda and Rog'Sai that don't have green.
So yeah, maybe we are in a world where green has a little bit wider array of stuff, I think. Legolas's Quick Reflex is one that comes to mind.
Yeah,
it's been like a new great addition.
It hasn't gotten a lot of tools, but the tools that it has gotten recently are like really huge punches, whereas like red has gotten a lot of like the illusion of tools.
I like that red's gotten more consistent with more Molten Duplications. That's one of red's strengths.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's gotten more copies of that card.
More like
Twin
a Tali
Flames.
Tools, yeah, and like more things for dual caster mages.
I like that as a way to increase the consistency of red-based decks in CDH without giving them card advantage. Just give them more of the cards that are good and they want.
But I think we get a lot more red cards now that are for like the tier 2 and 2, 3 decks, like Obnixilis and Rakdos, like those kind of red decks. I think we get a little bit more cards for, as opposed to like generically good red cards they're going to see play in every deck now.
Yeah. For now, Orcish Bowmaster, I think, is also keeps down a lot of the green strategy.
Yeah, that's true.
If no Orcish Bowmaster, I think green would firmly be better than red. Like, it would absolutely. But because there's such a potent, omnipresent threat that is really good against the green strategy, I think that kind of keeps it in check. I say in check, it keeps it in tied with 4.
Oh, yeah.
It's still not one of the top 3 colors.
No,
it's not Grixis.
No, I wouldn't
or
like
red,
before
blue, and white.
I would have like red up at like maybe in like the top 2 or top 3 colors now. But now if I have red at number 5, I'm not replacing it with green. I think everything just shifts up one spot.
Maybe. Black and blue are definitely the best colors, but I don't know that even white is that much. I think white, red, and green, I think, are all very close. Before, I thought I would say because of Dockside and Underworld Breach, red's the 3rd best color.
Really, the only reason why I want to be in red right now is because of Rograk.
Yeah.
Because of Rograk and Flare of Duplication. But if I'm not in Rograk, I don't really want to be in red, is my problem. time.
Yeah.
Because a Flare of Duplication is not even good in every single red deck.
Yeah, it's really only good in Rograk.
Magda. I do like it. I have liked it in Magda so far. But other than that, like, Rograk's the only reason to be in red for me now. And that's why I want to play Underworld Breaches, because I'm in a Rograk-based deck. I am playing Magda now, but I also am not playing Underworld Breach in Magda. So I feel like it's kind of like in this league of its own.
I think red, green, and white are all much similar in power level now. Yeah. And I kind of agree with that. I think blue and black are still the best colors, and I don't think that's disputable. Which one's better? You could argue either.
We could
tit
for tat on this all day.
But I think blue and black are the two best, and then the Naya red, green, and white are all somewhere in that next level.
Yeah, definitely can't argue with that.
I like where the metagame's at right now. It's been fun.
I really like where it's at too. I've had a blast with it. Yeah.
Yeah, the grindy games are super fun. They're really difficult. I learn a lot with them. The fast games are also, I obviously love that as well. Yeah, I don't know. I just been having a good time with CDH recently.
I feel like opening hands feel way more balanced.
More consistent.
Like, you can still have really explosive turns where you're getting like soul rings into signets and like really powering out a lot of stuff, but like it doesn't feel like the game is going like way heavily in one person's favor because of how busted of an opening start that they had.
Yes, yeah, it's more grindy.
Yeah. And I really like not having to play around Dockside Extortionist too.
Just dump
a lot more than I thought. Yeah. Dump them.
Just dump them.
Dump them into play.
Dump them into play. All right, that's it.
I think that's it.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Spengler, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wilds, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Godo 9, Kwaje Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use code playtowin5 at our affiliate link for 5% off.
You can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, or Blue Sky if you want more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mallcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin Mansolo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Thanks, y'all. I hate this world. This world is...
Why does it take 3 to 5 days for them to be like...
We're actually going to keep calling you for 3 to 5 days,
so
fuck you.
How does the save function just not work?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.